Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have an interesting show for you tonight. We have Scott Duchesne. He's going to be talking about the possible living sky. Are UFOs organic? Could they be living creatures? Could some of them be? It's going to be fascinating, I think. And so I want to thank everyone that helps out with the show, supports the show. Anyone can do that. You can find that information on our website, podcastufo.com. We have a new blog. We have a guest blogger in Tasmania, and he wrote a blog about the UFO world and his thoughts on that, living there all his life down in Tasmania. So that is on our website as well. And let's see. I am in a new studio. I moved last week, and so I noticed the internet has had a little bit of issue here. So I'm hoping it's not going to affect the show tonight. I'll try to get that worked out between now and next week, and fix anything that's going on with that if there are issues. And I think that's about all I want to talk about. I'm going to let Alejandro go from here. How you doing, Alejandro?
Good. How are you?
I'm exhausted, but I'm good.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, from all that moving. I don't know that I've ever heard of someone taking as long as you did. And I know that it wasn't because you were messing around. You were hauling stuff the entire time.
Yeah, some days from 6 in the morning until 1 the following morning. It was
holy
really...
Holy moly.
Yeah. When you have a big place, you tend to put things in places, and then you had no idea that you had things. So...
Oh.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. It's hard enough to move from, 1,500, 2,000 square foot place, but a place 2 to 3 times that... I can only imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to put everything in a big pile and burn it. But anyway, so what's going on in the UFO world?
So UFOs, there's quite a bit going on. At least, you know, there's a lot of news around, and a lot of people have seen this, and we've talked about this. In fact, we've been one of the few outlets to talk about this. But To the Stars Academy, of course, ran by Tom DeLong, an organization looking into the UFOs and paranormal. Some of the other members are people in intelligence and scientists. And, of course, Lou Elizondo, who used to run the DOD project investigating UFOs. So there was an SEC filing that came out. And it's because they're a public corporation. They're kind of a new type of corporation where it's kind of a crowdfunding based type of thing where, you know, you can buy shares to be part of this company. Well, a filing came out that said they were $37 million in debt. And so people started assuming, and you saw all these videos popping up, especially with conspiracy people and stuff. Oh, you know, To the Stars owes all this money. They're going under. This was just a big scam to steal money from people. There were even some people saying that they must have spent this $37 million. Or no, they weren't saying they must have. They were saying this is what happened. They spent this $37 million building an alien technology spaceship, and now they don't want to share it with anybody, and that's where the money must have went and all of this sort of thing. Well, what's funny about that is if they had built a spaceship like that, it probably would have cost more than $37 million. But as you know, I've been trying to point out to people, if you look at that filing, it was for equity stock compensation. So it's kind of a paper thing. It's not real money. It's not money that they spent. And I'm not going to say I understand it, but it's kind of been on the internet. And of course, I've addressed it and we've talked about it, I think, on the show. But it went big in the last couple of days, especially when Ars Technica wrote a story about it. And that got picked up by Mashable and some other news outlets. So it kind of got out there. But Ars Technica kind of took the perspective and the verbiage that you heard from kind of the conspiracy theories and from the social media out there. And obviously, the To the Stars people got a little upset, in particular Tom DeLonge. He posted a couple things on social media saying, you know, this guy got it all completely wrong and they need to retract that. And that got deleted yesterday, but there's another response that's kind of a little more formal and explanatory that came out from To the Stars today. Now, I am not, and I've sought the help of some people who know about accounting and corporate accounting, who've tried to explain it, and I know To the Stars tries to explain it here, but it's over my head, and I think it'll be over a lot of people's heads. But essentially, what he's saying is that it's not real debt. I mean, what they've been doing, like a lot of early companies, they'll pay their people in stock. So a lot of these people are practically essentially volunteers, which isn't too surprising because, of course, if you look at Mutual UFO Network, any of these organizations out there, they're all volunteers. But these guys are getting paid in a stock so that if the company does well, you know, at some point this stock will be worth something. And so that's what that number relates to, is actual stock. It's not money they owe or anything. Now, they didn't address part of that SEC filing, which does say something to the effect that this could be an issue for their viability going forward. In fact, it calls it a growing concern, and it says these factors raise doubt about the company's ability to continue as a going concern. So obviously it's something that is, you know, internally something they're working on, but it's not what it was. You know, it's not debt like they said it was. And in fact, To the Stars has reached out to many of the news outlets who have posted corrections to their stories. Ars Technica, I guess, has not done that yet, but many other outlets have. So, you know, it's not what it's been portrayed out there. And of course, a lot of people jumping the gun before they got information. And as we've said, you know, we'll wait for more information. And it appears to be what we thought it was. It's not like, you know, this huge debt like people are trying to make it out to be, nor have they built an alien spacecraft or anything like that. In fact, we know what they're up to because they're posting videos about what they're up to. They're up to, you know, looking into these materials. Apparently they have some materials that they believe have been retrieved from UFOs or anomalous occurrences, which are showing some promise, apparently, that they are doing some scientific studies and have found some of this stuff to be genuinely anomalous. And I know over time, and I don't think it's going to be the too distant future, they want to share their findings. So it'll be great to see that information once it comes out. But of course, that sort of work that they're doing, the lab testing, while it's expensive, isn't millions and millions of dollars. And in fact, in this SEC filing, you can see those numbers. I mean, everything they're doing, all these numbers are there. And you can see that these operating costs have cost them, you know, $100,000 or so dollars. So it's been expensive. But and that's what precludes this testing to happen in this field often, is that it is expensive. And, you know, expensive for an average person is in the thousands to tens of thousands. The normal person out on this, you know, volunteer can't afford to pay that to get this stuff analyzed. So it is, I feel, beneficial that they're doing this. And we'll see what happens with the material. At least we'll learn more about some of the materials out there that have been suspected to be anomalous. So that's some news that's out there because those stories have been running. And you know how it is with the news cycle. Once the wrong story gets out, that is the predominant story. And typically corrections, you know, they either don't get out there or you never hear about them. So.
Yeah, that's the story that people remember and
right,
and fall back on. Now, so this was a public filing. Is that how this got out?
Exactly. It's a public filing. It's something that they have to do. This filing, let's see, was posted on June 30th, 2018. So it's been out there for a while before people kind of ran across it. But, of course, this is the Securities and Exchange Commission. And since they are a corporation that are dealing in shares, that's why they have to, you know, follow the rules and regulations. And some of that is to disclose and to write these reports. So there is one actually from last year you can go find as well. But yeah, this was the latest update.
Now, when they do something like this, you said that Tom made some type of statement. Did he clear it all up and say, "Hey, everyone, everything's okay. You know, stop worrying or anything." What was the gist of what he wrote?
The gist was explaining. I guess to begin, this is kind of an introduction. We appreciate the professionalism in most media channels who have taken the steps to update their articles and inform their readers of their mistake. And, you know, gets into how essentially just saying this isn't debt, like people keep saying, like many other startups, you know, we're paying our people in stock. And so this is a stockholder equity deficit number that looks like this big number that we owe, but it's not. If you look at the details, the notes on that same SEC filing, you'll see more information about that. I've looked at those notes. I just don't understand accounting speak, so I don't get it. It's often like talking about multiple dimensions and the science behind that. That's one that's way over my head too. So so that's essentially what he was saying. He said, you know, Tom DeLonge, that was from To the Stars. Tom DeLonge personally said, I want to mention that I appreciate, you know, those who have reached out, and those journalists who have been correcting things. But that's about all they've said. So they didn't speak to that point of whether or not, you know, the state of the company. You know, I don't think that doesn't appear they want to make a comment on that as of yet. But I haven't reviewed all the corrections, and maybe one of those corrections will speak to that.
Okay, great. We have just a couple of minutes. Anything else?
I guess that's the big news that people will see out there right now. Otherwise, that's the biggest thing out there. Otherwise, I would say there's lots of news out there about Project Blue Book because of New York Comic Con a week or so ago. And those are some really neat stories out there. So I would recommend people take a look at that. You know, excitement's growing for this television show that'll be coming out January 1 about Project Blue Book and Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Oh, it's January 1. Wow. So they're really promoting this ahead.
Yeah, I think it's January. I'm pretty sure it is. Now you're making me question. But
well, anyone can look that up. All they have to do is Google that.
It's coming out very soon is what we need to know.
Yeah, right. All right.
And January is coming up really quick. You know, the holidays come. You know how it is. After Halloween, all of a sudden it's Thanksgiving, then it's Christmas, and you're like, whoa, where did those 3 months go?
You know, about 3 or 4 days ago, I had to go to Home Depot for something. And I walked in the door, and it was Santa Claus and Christmas trees. And
when?
It's October.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding.
No. I took a picture of it.
Wow.
And put it on Facebook. And it's like, you know, I was joking with the girl there. I said, is this for next year? You know, you're doing it earlier and earlier all the time. Anyway.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, it's Halloween. We need our costumes still.
Yeah. I know. Well, anyway. All right. Well, thanks, Alejandro.
And all right. Thank you.
We'll be talking next week. And everyone, don't forget to check out Alejandro's live stream show, especially you people that like to watch on YouTube now. It's every Thursday. And go ahead, give them the pitch on that.
Sure. It's called UFOs Seriously. It's every Thursday at 6 p.m. Arizona time, which is currently aligned with Pacific. And, yep, you can just go to the Open Minds TV YouTube channel and go check it out there.
Yeah, and you won't be aligned too much longer. We go into we change in daylight savings time fairly soon, I think.
Oh, we do. Yeah, I always forget when that is.
I
but
do too.
Yeah, so
I wish
we'll change
we didn't do
and,
that.
And
yeah, Arizona doesn't.
And that's what's nice about Arizona. We don't do that, but it still causes trouble because everybody else does. But of course, on there you'll be able to ask questions live, and I try to answer questions, and then I go over all of the UFO news for the week, of course, which you can see at openminds.tv.
Excellent. All right, Alejandro, talk to you next week.
All right, talk to you next week. Have a great show.
All right, thank you. So our guest this evening is Scott Duchesne, and he has a couple of books, The Sky is Alive, The Living Sky, and we're going to be talking about all that and so much more. fascinating topic. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and we have in the background, you have some posters going. When we pop up on full screen, we'll be able to show the people watching YouTube that. So I thought this was fascinating because I remember what your subject is, because I've watched a video one time. I remember it clearly. It looked like a jellyfish, and it looked like something living. And a few people have talked about experiences where they were thinking things were alive. That's a whole other subject I'll talk to you about as we get into it a little bit more. But what caused you to look into this, and also what made you take this approach that I don't think anyone else has ever taken?
Well, actually, it's not my idea totally. I've taken it sort of some logical conclusions or some logical next steps. But I'm sure a lot of folks who are interested in UFOs are familiar with the name Kenneth Arnold. You know, he's the gentleman whose sighting in 1947 sparked the whole term flying saucer. Well, he studied UFOs the rest of his life, and he came to the conclusion that they were some kind of natural flora or fauna of the atmosphere, that they were living things. And it's kind of a mystery to me why more people don't pay attention. Everybody sort of lionizes Kenneth Arnold, but nobody pays attention to those conclusions that he had. I know there's been interviews with his daughter where she talks about some of his conclusions, but he talked to pilots, many pilots during his research, during his study of UFOs, and a lot of them told him stories of lifelike UFOs that were approaching planes. So what you described earlier, people saying, oh, it looked like a jellyfish, oh, it moved, and you know, that's a very common thing. In fact, that's what sort of led me into that whole area of study, looking at, you know, once we started finding that you can have visual evidence of UFOs. I mean, I've always been fascinated by scary stories. And once we started having videotapes and DVDs, I decided to look closely at a lot of the UFO evidence. So you had people who didn't have access to a camera before, all of a sudden recording these things. And now everybody with a phone has a camera. So all of a sudden you're seeing, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of recordings of these objects. And you look at them, and so many of them, well, first of all, as I'm sure you're well aware, most of them are blurry or indistinct, or you can't tell what it is. But the few where they are clear, they don't really look like mechanical craft, but a lot of them look like what we call, you know, the kind of organisms that we see living in Earth's oceans. And that sort of started me down that avenue, is looking, considering the possibility that our atmosphere might be a habitat that's similar to Earth's oceans. And the more I've looked, the more I've found. It's just a fascinating topic. And there's all kinds of evidence out there, all kinds of visual evidence. And the best thing about it is that it provides a clear path for study going forward. We're not just looking at things in the past and saying, oh, what was it? What was it? And arguing about what it was. There's actually different specific ways we can go forward and study this and try and find out if this is really a provable hypothesis.
Well, a couple of things I thought of in this whole topic of yours, and one of them is, are these things actually supposed to be floating? Or how do they maintain, you know, weightlessness, you know, less than air, as they say, you know, how, and then navigate and all that?
That's a good question. A lot of people ask that. They go, how do they stay up? You know, why don't they just fall out of the sky? And to really understand the topic, one of the reasons that it's kind of simple, but it's kind of revolutionary in a lot of ways. But one of the challenges to understanding the topic is you have to understand several different things. First, you have to think of the atmosphere. You have to understand a little bit about Earth's atmosphere. And then you have to understand a little bit about the UFO problem, you know, what we see with the question of UFOs, why are, you know, the whole nature of the phenomena. And then is where you take sort of a left turn, and you have to look at the type of organisms that we find in Earth's other fluid environment, the ocean. But let's start with the atmosphere. We think of the atmosphere I heard somebody once say that goldfish don't know what water is because they swim in it all the time. Now, we don't think of the atmosphere as a habitat because we just take it for granted. But it's this giant environment. It's this, you know, vaporous cloud that surrounds the planet. It's huge. It has 5 million times more volume than Earth's oceans. And we tend to think of it as just empty space, but it's not. There's huge amounts of water and minerals and energy just coursing through the atmosphere on a scale we can't even imagine. So closer to the Earth, the atmosphere is more dense. And as we rise higher, it gets less dense until at the edge of space, there's not really a hard line there. It's just kind of some kind of transfer back and forth between the edge of space and Earth's atmosphere. So things moving through the atmosphere don't have to float. They just have to be less dense than what's immediately below them. So it's like asking, you know, why don't fish just sink to the bottom of the ocean? Well, they maintain their buoyancy through that fluid environment. And that's what I'm proposing, is that the types of organisms that we seem to see in the atmosphere are the kind that can maintain that sort of buoyancy.
Now, I understand you just said that there's 5 million times more volume in the atmosphere than all the oceans. But
right.
It seems to me that if there was actually something up there, wouldn't it be detected more often, or is it just that it's so vast? I mean, is it all kinds of things come to mind. How do these things breed? Where do they hang out for the most part? What do they eat? Do they eat birds? all that.
Well, that's a good question. Those are great questions. And part of it comes down to another challenge about this hypothesis is accepting. I mean, humans tend to think that we're the grand poobah of the food chain. We're at the top of the food chain. But if you think of our planet's environment and the different habitats that are there, you know, it's 2/3, 3/4 of the planet is oceans. We can't live in the oceans. Enveloping the whole planet or the atmosphere, we can't live in the atmosphere. Our habitat is just this tiny skin on the surface of the land. We can't live below the surface of the land. We live on the surface of the land. So if you think about our perspective, that's our perspective, right on the surface of the Earth. Now, if you think in the past, we've only been having powered air flight for a little over 100 years. So we tend to think that we understand what's up there, but we really don't. Now, there's a possibility that there is an entire realm of life that's too fast, too smart, and possibly, you know, too indistinct, too good at disguising itself for us to perceive. And you ask, why don't we see them all the time? Well, we do. As you're aware, one of the mysteries of the UFO phenomena is how many people see them. And people see them all the time. And that was, to me, one of the bits of kind of evidence that sort of cemented in my mind that this was a real possibility. I said, okay, let's test this hypothesis. You know, if these are living creatures, you know, if they're up in the atmosphere, wouldn't people see them? And I thought, well, what's the most credible evidence that we can find? I said, let's go look at the NASA program. Let's see what, you know, the astronauts have seen. Let's go look at what the shuttle and the space station have recorded. And what I found just boggled my mind. You were probably aware of some of the footage that's out there, some of the shuttle footage that's out there that's been reported as, you know, UFO sightings and unexplained objects. But if you look at these things, they are just hours and hours and hours of unexplained objects moving through the atmosphere.
Are you talking about from from the capsule windows? No, we actually have to go to break here, so I'm going to have to...
Okay.
We'll have to come back to this. But so let's just come back to this. I'm going to ask the question, are these things that they have filmed right outside the window, basically? And
okay.
So hang in there, everyone. We're going to go to break right now. So we'll go back to that looking out the window of a capsule or whatever it is, space station or all that.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah. So anyway, you actually, I didn't ask this in the main part of the show, But what actually got you interested in the topic of UFOs to begin with?
Well, my brother used to read me, I don't know if you remember Frank Edwards, Stranger Than Science. Yeah. Do you remember those books?
Yeah.
he used to read those to my sister and my brother and I and scare the pants off of us. And so, of course, I wanted to find out, you know, what's really going on, you know? And then, so you can blame Frank Edwards. And then, of course, I started researching, reading the greats like John Keel and Ivan Sanderson. And in fact, Ivan Sanderson wrote a whole book postulating that UFOs might be living creatures. So, yeah, like I said, it's not my original idea. My idea is just to say, oh, they're kind of similar to the organisms. It's not a stretch of the imagination to think they might be very similar to the organisms we find in the oceans. But yeah, that's, you know, the whole idea, the scary story aspect of it is what got me interested in it.
And have you explored other topics as well? You've written other books.
Well, yeah, my career it was actually producing educational booklets for different organizations. So that's one of the things that sort of led me into this area as well. I studied, I did a lot of work for conservation agencies where I studied living things, habitats, natural resources, how all those things interacted to create an environment to make life possible. And so it got me thinking about the resources in the atmosphere. And that's sort of, I thought, well, gosh, you got all these resources in the atmosphere for a habitat. I wonder what's there. And sure enough, everywhere we look, you know, we find more things. And that's something we can talk about, too, is some of the areas in the atmosphere where we find things that seem to look like living things.
Yeah, I've heard scientists say that the atmosphere around Earth is like the skin of an apple. It's not,
right.
It's not in comparison to the Earth, we don't have a lot of it. Which,
right, and in fact, that's one of the things that's kind of important about why we need to study this is because, you know, if these things, we can talk when we get back to from the break. We can talk about sprites. I don't know if you've heard anything about those.
Yeah, yeah, I've watched a documentary on that before. Reverse lightning actually goes up, which
right,
yeah.
Well, they, I was one of my contacts sent me something recently about an astronaut who was, I think it was STS, Shuttle Mission 115, where he just was interviewed by someone and he said that the things that they saw there looked like they were organic. And that was interesting because for an astronaut to say that was kind of that's a big deal.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been a few that have said some pretty interesting things.
Yeah, and I don't know, are you familiar with Martin Stubbs, the fellow that recorded a lot of this footage?
No.
He was a Canadian public access television director, and in the early days, a lot of the shuttle feeds down from, you know, the shuttle, they were, you know, unsecured. And so he was there with the public access television station in Canada, and he would just record, you know, just keep changing the tapes out, recording all the stuff from the shuttle.
hang on just a minute. I think we're about ready to go back. All right, welcome back. This is Martin Willis. My guest is Scott Duchesne. And Scott, we were talking just before the break about what people had been filming outside of the window of NASA spacecraft, or actually the space station as well, I believe. But if correct me if I'm wrong. But a lot of the footage, are you talking about this footage that people caught that was transmitted, or that someone can actually get the files now?
There's a whole range of different pieces of footage that have been caught over the years of the decades of exploration. As a matter of fact, you know, you don't have to look very far to find this evidence. The first time we put a man into orbit, John Glenn, he reported the famous Firefly incident where he saw these objects, these luminous particles all around his capsule as he moved there through, you know, around the planet. And he saw them near dawn each time as he came into the dawn area of the atmosphere. And after that, you know, if you think about the astronauts orbiting the planet, I mean, their first impulse, their first concern is safety, to do everything correct so they can get back down safely. So when we had a chance to remain in orbit for longer times with the space station and during the shuttle program, they had a little more time to focus on the things that were outside the craft. And when they started looking outside the craft, they actually recorded some amazing stuff. Some of it was by design, but some of it was by accident. They used some different cameras that would reveal things that weren't visible to the naked eye. For example, the shuttle mission 39, they call them STS, STS-39 in 1991. They used a type of camera called Cirrus, which is an acronym for a camera that allowed them to look into the infrared spectrum. Well, when they trailed it, when they pointed it outside, they saw this whole swarm of things moving by the camera. They looked like pulsing squid, which are one of the types of organisms that are very prominent in Earth's oceans, and they're perfectly suited for moving in a fluid environment. And they've also been reported flying. So we know that squid fly, and we know they come out of the water, and we know that some of them are bigger than we even imagine. Now, is it a big stretch to think that some of them move up through the atmosphere? Well, this particular piece of footage from STS-39 actually shows what seemed to be a swarm of these things moving by the capsules. They pull.
All right, everyone, that's it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Nick Redfern. And he's going to be talking about his new book. When doesn't Nick have a new book? Anyway, thanks for listening. And if you'd like to listen to the full 2-hour shows, all you have to do is help us out for $2 or more a month. And all that information's on podcastufo.com. Thanks again for listening. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.